You are now listening to the Ear Space podcast, trying out different intro ideas. We got Ian Bowman on the podcast today. This is the father of Rachel the intern, whose internship has just ended. Be on the lookout for a full episode with her. But until then, get to know her dad, Ian.
Has begun. Thanks for coming on down to Ear Space. I just want to introduce yourself, tell me a little bit about you, and then we'll get on into it, if you will.
Yeah, Ian Bowman. Thanks for having me, by the way. Ian Bowman. Sure. Here, and because I was invited by my daughter Rachel, and she's been doing some interning stuff with you, so
yeah,
seemed like a cool opportunity to get to meet you and chat a bit.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I mean, we don't normally ask people this, but because of the situation, what's your first impression of the studio? I always like to hear people's thoughts.
Yeah, what is it? It's sort of like bohemian, just a little bit of everything. I like it.
Yeah.
It's cool. Reminds me of like maybe a bit of how my house was decorated growing up as a kid.
Yeah. Word. Yeah, I'm a big fan of visual arts. You know, I understand the music aspect of it, but the, you know, visual artist paintings, I just like looking at stuff, you know, it's very inspiring to me. But I got a bunch of questions for you, kind of off the top of my head. One thing I was super curious about is, like, I don't have any kids, but what's it like raising children in 2023?
Oh, man.
And it's kind of a big one.
Yeah. And I don't know that it's... I don't know that it's like dramatically different now than it's ever been. It's kind of unnerving because the world moves faster than you're used to by the time you're my age, right? But and every kid is different, so they've all got their own things. We have four,
okay.
Right? Rachel's the oldest, young 20s. Natalie's 18, and then we got little guys like just turned 11 and 9.
Okay, gotcha.
And so, you know, it's so different, each one, because everything changes so fast, right?
Like, right.
Rachel was the first one to start to deal with phones, you know, and we felt like we were holding off for a while on, you know, just giving a device, but, you know, soon enough, they've got one, and that's a whole new world that we didn't grow up with,
right?
So, yeah. And I think, what's it like? So many opportunities to find what they're interested in. And so many things that can be distracting and come into their lives that you don't necessarily have control over. So
right, mix
of that.
Yeah. No, I'd imagine it's a lot with technology and all that good stuff. What's kind of like your approach to it? You mentioned when the phone came into it. I'm always curious about parents, like, you know, approach to that, because it seems to be such like a hot button issue these days.
Yeah. try to hold it off a while, you know? As long as you reasonably can, because you know that stuff is going to come through to them that that you wouldn't choose for them, that they might not even choose for themselves until it does, right? And then it's there, and then you can't get rid of it. So, so try to hold it off, but you know it can't be forever. They've got to learn. They've got to have the freedom to make mistakes and that kind of thing. So, that's the gist.
Gotcha, gotcha. Well, like I said, I think I said before, we're going to kind of fly all over the place and whatnot. And there's no real timeline here, but where are you from?
I grew up in a tiny little town in Northern California.
Okay.
Almost Oregon, right on the coast. Lots of redwoods, cold, windy beaches.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful place to grow up. But it was basically logging and fishing industries.
Mm.
Both of those were kind of long, slow, dying industries. And then... had the opportunity to move to New Jersey and get ready for school my last couple of years of high school. And I was one of, you know, not that many people from that little town that go to college, and I got to do that.
Gotcha.
And so then just bounced around a little bit. And then I met my wife in high school.
In New Jersey?
In New Jersey,
okay.
Just outside of Princeton area. And and so now we've moved out here about 23 years ago from that area, 24 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
And this area has definitely grown on me. So I'm on the edge of saying I'm from here now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But got a few other spots that I stopped first.
That's awesome. So, I mean, you said you met your wife in high school. Have you been together since then?
Yeah. for the most part. That's so beautiful. We thought at the end of high school, you know, we were going to separate colleges far apart and not great communication skills at that point. Yeah, you know, we assumed that we would be broken up. But then I got a voicemail from her maybe like a week into it.
Yeah.
And then we had like multi-$100 phone bills.
Yeah, right, right. Couldn't afford. It wasn't free, or not free.
The long distance, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then we ended up meeting back at Rutgers. I was in Boston and she was in Pittsburgh area. And we're meeting back at Rutgers for our last couple of years.
That's awesome. Was it just like, you know, passing in the halls type stuff? Or like, how'd you guys meet?
Well, we had a mutual friend. There was that.
Yeah.
I actually had a locker that was next to her brother's girlfriend. I think he was out of high school by that point. She was still there.
Yeah.
But so she kind of maybe noticed me there, but she said I looked like an eighth grader when I was in high school. So she thought I was like cute for an eighth grader kind of thing.
Nice. Cool.
I was a senior, by the way.
Okay, gotcha.
Probably at the time that she thought I was an eighth grader.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm real big on like, I love people, or excuse me, I love asking people this question because everyone always seems to have a different approach to it, but I would assume so. How long have you been with her? Or I said, how long have you been together? You know, long time?
Yeah, let's see, 18, something like that, 17 till 52. What's the math on that?
I don't know.
A long time.
Yeah, cool. What is, like, how do you personally define love?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it changes, right? In a love relationship. So different styles of love, right?
Yeah, right.
Love for your brother man, love for, but in a relationship it changes, right? There's the infatuation, of course. There's the you know, things that you really like about each other intensely.
Yeah.
And then there's the kind of now I do for you because I love you, like the service aspect of it, you know, and that's one of the things that I think grows over time, and it sneaks up on you for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I don't know. I'm in a relationship now. It's my longest relationship I've ever been in, going on almost 10 years, which is mind boggling to me. But you know,
that's awesome.
It's all relative.
That's
awesome. And it's like, I'm very inspired by other people's opinions on this thing that we all share, you know, of love. It seems to mean a wide variety of different things to other people.
So funny you mentioned that. My wife just today, you know, we're to the age where our kids are to the age, the younger ones, where we're finally just trying to get out more and like have date nights and things like that again. So she brought me today a thing that was like a one night only showing of basically that topic of like a movie about, you know, what are the definitions of love. And so I think we're gonna go see that October 16th, something like that.
What's it called? I'll go check that out too. Do you remember
Love or something like that? I'll find it.
She
texted it to me so I can send it to you.
It
seemed kind of cool.
Yeah, I think that's also one of the things that I hear often, people that are in like long-term relationships, is like trying to, you know, dedicating time, because, you know, we all get so busy with our lives and whatnot.
Yeah,
that's cool. Well, speaking about time management, awesome transition. What do you do for work? What's your, Rachel's mentioned to me a couple things in the past, but.
Yeah, so I started my own business about 5 years ago, doing, we'll call it business intelligence, where you basically use some off the shelf software to drag a bunch of data together and then show people patterns. And, you know, usually that's business data because those are the people that are willing to pay for it for the most part. And I'm kind of combining that tool set and that ability with some of my background that was more in product management. And I did that for a long time, a couple of decades. And so that's about kind of breaking down a business into different pieces. So, you know, here, I know I've heard you mention like you've got kind of a product where you spend a couple hours of recording time and then you're mixing and then they leave with, you know, for a certain amount of money and time, they leave with a product, a mixed to a certain degree thing, right? And so a lot of what I do is try to help people understand the data around that. So if you look at your financial statements from your accountant, that's not really going to help you do that. It'll help you know, you know, was I profitable overall or not, right? Yeah. But it's not like, well, what parts of my business should I grow? What seems to be getting traction? And that growth focus is a big one for me, because I've worked in the corporate world enough and been through a cycle to know the growth part's really fun.
Yeah.
And then the part where you're trying to squeeze every nickel and dime out of it, you know, that's not fun. Right. So I'd really try to focus on what pieces people want to grow. And so usually if a company's going to work with me, they already have that appetite, right? They're acquiring, or they're like, we want to triple or double in the next 3 years or 2 years. Some, you know, there's sort of that near time frame, and they just know they're going to keep creating blind spots and shooting themselves in the foot by taking as much action as they are. So they try to get their arms around it a little bit better.
That's fascinating. I might actually reach out to you guys. I have a very similar problem. I've been tracking everything in like QuickBooks and whatnot, and like figuring out different aspects, because we do, like you mentioned, our main gig here is recording, mixing, mastering and whatnot, but we also have like a couple different aspects of things that we do here, and I've been trying to figure out exactly like what, and more importantly, who is specifically spending the most and doing the most in like over these different categories. Is that something that like you guys would be able to figure out?
Yeah. So like customer lifetime value things, know, what's the mix of products that a given customer is buying that helps them become more successful, hopefully, at what they're doing, but also helps you.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a big part of that is like, well, first I'll say, you know, the way I think of business intelligence, making it a little bit more visual, is it's a bit like watching a weather map, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to tell you exactly what to do, but it's going to go, oh, hey, there's rain over here. It's snowing, you know, whatever. Yeah, yeah. And so you can kind of see it, and that just helps to make decisions more confidently.
Okay.
But yeah, so there are a couple things about business intelligence that I think are helpful. In almost anything, there's like the Pareto principle, the 80-20, or sometimes it's 70-30, 90-10, you know, whatever it is, something in that range where there's, you know, some small amount of actions or people or, you know, offerings or whatever that drive an inordinately large amount of value for both you and customers usually. And then there's usually something on the flip side of it where the vast majority of customers, or you know, whatever the thing is, it drives very little value. It's very just small incremental, right? And so seeing that can be pretty transformational in a business.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
that's fascinating. I always love like talking to different business owners, entrepreneurs about whatever their specific thing is that they do. You know, like I understand what you're saying, but I don't really like fully like grasp all of it. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's just fascinating to me. You know, there's so many different ways you can, you know, get into your own thing.
Yeah.
Kind of like the breaking point between the previous conversation, like of balance and life and whatever, like, you know, I struggle with this and I'm starting to kind of figure it all out a little bit more, but you know, you have a family, you're an individual person, you started your business. I understand that a business takes more than just working a 9-to-5. Like, how do you balance your work life? Do you have employees? Like, it's kind of a multifaceted question, but
yeah, it's great. So I guess first, I am not particularly geared for balance. I don't know that I ever have been.
Yeah, yeah.
This feels most of the time more balanced than what I was doing before, but there's still a long way to go.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm good to listen to for balance just yet, but I'm working on it.
Yeah.
So previous to the last 5 years when I started my business, I was doing product management and, you know, first for some smaller companies and then bigger companies. And so I traveled about a third of the year. And that's not particularly balanced, right? There's like, you know, it's Sunday. I'm not in the mood for community. I'm in the mood for thinking about where I'm going to be tomorrow, you know, for the next week.
Right.
And so I'm really glad to kind of be done with that. And so that feels way more balanced. Like I can go and enjoy a full weekend. I can go hang out with, go to church and then hang out with families afterwards, right? And that feels wonderful. I know where I'm going to be on Monday in my chair, which is in my house.
Right.
So, and that's another piece of it, like is maybe it's integration as much as balance. So I've got an office in the house. It's in the sunroom. I get to see when the kids come home. I get to stop if I'm not on a call right then and chat with them. And so, you know, It kind of flows back and forth a little bit. But I still work a lot of evenings, like a lot of evenings, and I have an unfortunate habit occasionally of doing overnighters, and you know, so I'm still getting there. Yeah. Last year, I finally got to the point where, you know, there's such a thing as kind of hypothetically too much consulting, and then there's actually too much consulting, right? Where you're you know, dragging for days, and so there was probably a couple of months where it was actually too much, and so my planning for the year ahead was, I need to get help. So I kind of had a theme for the year, which was, the less I do alone, the more we earn together.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So I sort of started down that journey. And that's actually been surprising and awesome, because one of the things that I liked about the tool that I use is that you could do so much alone. And it was the sort of thing where when I was in business before, you know, I would have to make business cases to get resources to do something to the product, whether that was software or hire more people or whatever. And so you found that you had to step over a lot of valuable but smaller problems. Let's call them $100,000 problems, $200,000 problems, to find the handful of million-dollar problems that you could, or more, that you could focus enough time on to put a full business case together to go and ask, right? And it was kind of tiring stepping over those problems to go do this rigmarole.
Yeah.
So anyway, when I got into this, I was like, wow, this is awesome. I can just do it, you know?
Yeah.
And that felt great. But business is very, you know, it's relational. You can't just do it on your own. Right. And if you're trying, you're probably not growing, and you're not helping others grow as much as that. So I'm kind of on the edge, right? It's been about 5 years. I think I've got enough craft to be able to do things well. I'm bringing in other people, and I'm no longer like, oh, well, if I bring in somebody else, does that mean that I don't know how to do it well enough, and that's why I bring them in, right? So getting past a lot of that. And that's been great. That's been super helpful. But I still find that I have some, you know, late nights and whatnot. So I am... I'm looking to build out a larger team, probably about 10 feels about right for me for the next few years.
Yeah.
So that, you know, so that we can help each other along.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well said too. It's been weird. You know, like I started, it's interesting. From what I understand, like your business is mostly like tech based, right? Like software based. You can do it. You did it by yourself for a while, correct?
It's just a software program that costs like $20 a month, and then, you know, dragging data from other people's software programs.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. So like similar worlds. I love how you said that we could grow together too, because I mean, for the longest time I was like, well, I could just do it all by myself. Mm-hmm. And then especially when you throw in the art aspect of it, there's all the subjectivity and like taste-based decisions and all that other stuff. But I noticed, like, I have Ian Cornelia that I mentioned, the drummer. When I brought him in, immediately I was like, oh, I have so much more time that I can spend on other pursuits of the business itself, you know?
Yeah.
And then I talk with a lot of other entrepreneurs, you know, business owners and the like, of, like, people that are working towards not working. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's the one thing that has always kind of messed with my head, because, like, I love to work. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, don't get me wrong, like I enjoy like sitting on the beach like anybody else or whatever, but like I live for this, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't want to lose that necessarily, you know? Like I'm just trying to do as much as I can and have other people help me with it too, which sounds similar. Yeah,
very similar.
A little bit.
Yeah. Very similar.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of like I don't exactly know what I would do with myself if I wasn't working.
Exactly. Yeah.
But it would be nice to have the option to find out on certain days,
right. Yeah. Yeah,
probably go garden something and then come back and work again, just as a hobby.
Yeah, no, that's good stuff. Where do you think like your driving work or your work? I can't speak right now. I got so much caffeine going through my system. Your work drive comes from. Jeez, excuse me.
All right, let's see here.
Your work ethic is what I was trying to say.
Ethic. All right. Well, you know, I grew up. We didn't have a lot of money, right? That's my mom had cancer when I was very young, like 7 years old, brain cancer, and so you know we had hospital bills and things like that and treatments, but we didn't have much, and so that was okay. I was pretty okay with that, you know. We didn't lack for anything in particular, but as I got older, it was kind of like, okay, so where did it come from? Because, okay, so finally when I did start to find some things that I was good at, I think it was partly that I found that I was good at them because I was willing to go harder and longer than other people. Mm. So cross country, when I was a kid, I was pretty good at cross country. I always ran up a level. I got into college and started rowing. That's another endurance kind of sport.
That's a great one.
And so, yeah, so maybe it just sort of started there. And like, so I was noticing that when I was good at something, it was because I would go hard at it and go for longer than anybody else was willing to, you know?
Yeah. Interesting. And how do you like, not to get too, like, too meta about it, but like, how do you instill that on other people? Because like someone asked me the same question recently and I was like, I don't know, like my father started a business when I was like 2 or 3 years before I was born. And he's always been like a super like do it yourself, figure it out, get over it, work, get it done. And I'd say that I got that from him, but like, I don't know how. It wasn't necessarily that he was like, hey, like this is how you work hard.
I don't know exactly. And I don't know that. People have different styles, right? And I don't know that mine is the right style. It's just the one that I do, and I'm not super self-reflective about it all the time. So this will be my self-reflection for the month.
Yeah. I always joke that like the podcast, like it started off for this one reason, this, and now it's just turned into me like having therapy sessions with people that I don't know. No, that's interesting stuff, though. So you said 5 years ago is when the business was created.
Yes.
And what's it called?
Work Adaptive.
Okay, cool.
I hate naming things, by the way.
I was going to ask, like, what was the I mean, I don't want to knock it. It's not like it's such a on-the-nose name, but, like, why that name?
Adaptive.
It's not bad, so, you know, but...
Yeah, so Adaptive. I think the world changes faster and faster, I think that we're living in a time when you need to be more adaptive, right?
Yeah.
In much, much shorter cycles. So I can remember, again, I said I did product management for a couple of decades, and I can remember when it felt reasonable to get a request for a 5-year plan. Hey, what's your 5-year plan? Then there came a time where I was like, okay, well, here's my 5-year plan because you asked for it, but I just want you to know that the last 2 years, I put no thought into it. I just extended the line. And then it didn't feel reasonable to give a 3-year plan anymore. Again, because technology was changing so fast, market conditions were changing so fast.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll give you a 1-year plan that has 4 made up numbers after it.
Yeah,
and even the 1-year plan might be kind of made up.
Yeah.
So that, like seeing that kind of progression, it just feels like we're living in a time where you have to be able to constantly adapt. And that was the most thought that went into that.
That makes sense.
And then I had to find something that went with adaptive.
Yeah. No, that's valid. But, we've been talking about this a lot on the podcast lately, and I hate to bring it up, but also for the listeners out there, sorry to beat a dead horse, but speaking about adapting, are you concerned at all? What are your thoughts on like machine learning and AI and all that good stuff?
Yeah. Am I concerned at all? Yeah. I think people have an ability to adapt to change.
Right. Yes.
But when it comes faster and faster, I think it produces a lot of anxiousness for people. Mm. They don't, like, you don't necessarily know how to be good at something if you can only be good at it for a split second and then it's gone and then there's something else, right? So I think that's the kind of worry that I have in the near term, is just that the pace of change will become pretty overwhelming for a lot of people who aren't geared that way.
Right.
And there are a lot of people who they just like to do the same thing day after day, right? And and it gives them comfort and it gives them meaning and whatnot. I'm not the furthest from that, but I like a lot of change.
Yeah.
But I can see that there's a lot coming, right?
Yeah.
And so, okay, so that's the near term. Longer term, you know, Skynet seems like a reasonable end to this. I don't know.
Right.
You know?
I guess we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I have no idea. But but that human ability to work with change, I think, is the near one.
Yeah. I'm not as concerned as I am curious.
Yeah.
You know, like, to your point, though, too, I am kind of concerned because I'm like, I'm constantly learning as much as I possibly can about everything and everything all at once. And of course, you know, as you learn more, you realize that you're never going to know everything. Yeah. You can't learn everything, right? But especially on the tech side, it's like, all right, I'm starting to understand this new software for this new application, then maybe it'll, and then the next day it's like, oh, there's a new thing that comes out.
Yeah,
you know, and especially I'm sure you're fully aware of this, with like, you know, you learn a new program, it takes some time, you got to figure out, you know, the little things here and there and whatnot.
Yeah, and right now I'm so learning, fast. I'm learning how to speak ChatGPT finally.
Like, yeah,
you know, the
yeah.
prompt, it even has a name, prompt engineering.
Right? Yeah, right, right.
But so that was one of the ones that's I think that's going to be a pretty big leap. It's just that natural language interface,
yeah.
you know, huge, huge thing. So I'm playing with a couple of programs right now, for a client, on their behalf, but it's also 'cause I'm curious about it, you
yeah,
know,
right.
But it's basically like building a bot just by taking, you know, all of ChatGPT and then rolling in a couple of additional sources of data. It could be their website, it could okay. be their, you know, pricing page that's kind of behind the scenes or frequently asked questions, so that people can interact with it and get answers to their questions. And right. I should say that's not the thing that I normally do. I talked about business intelligence, but, you know, really I'm helping people grow, helping clients grow. Right. And this happens to be a client that's just their friends. I get to learn a lot of stuff by yeah. working with them. So I veer off of my normal course to help them in different ways, whatever I can do.
Right. right?
So yeah, they're interesting, but that's an example, right? Yeah. Of like, hey, you know, 2 months ago, there were none of these things that you could, maybe it was a little longer ago than that, but right. you know, there were none of these things that you could just instantly spin up a bot that gave good answers. And now all of a sudden there's not one, but like 20.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, it's wild stuff. We've done a couple experiments. I mean, I've used ChatGPT for a couple things, you know, both personally and professionally. I've run some interesting tests with it, some different thought experiments and all that other good stuff. But it's fascinating. I'll say that, you know, the potential of even there's a website, or it's a service. The name is somewhere in my brain, but you can build websites with it.
Yeah.
And it'll code everything, get everything all up to snuff and all that other stuff. And I was like, wow, this is the first thing that I've seen that's coming out of this that I can actually use like today. You
yeah.
know? You know, we our website's on like Squarespace, because I used to pay somebody like thousands of dollars to do everything. And then I wanted to change one word, I'd have to give them like $100. And I was like, I'll just do it myself. I'll do it through Squarespace. And like, you know, it's cool, it's fine, but it's not, there's better websites out there, you know? I see this thing come around, and I'm like, oh, wow, like this is, you know,
yeah.
now literally like this, you know, the my old developer, like that's his thing, you know?
And the content that goes in it, right?
Yeah,
and the,
right.
Yeah. So, you know, same client that I'm doing that for, we just redid their website within yeah. the last year, and it probably cost close to $50,000-$60,000
yeah.
overall,
yeah.
you know? A lot of imagery, a lot of everything, but you know, a lot of it was trying to get the writing right.
Right.
And now all of a sudden we're like, okay, well, we can't keep paying that per page if other people right. can, you know, spit out decent enough
yeah.
content that's SEO friendly and, yep. you know, yeah, it's a big change.
It's wild though, too. Even so early on, in the tech, there's a, Courtney, Jam Hot Radio. We had her on the podcast before. I would recommend, we talked about a bunch of other stuff, but one of the things, the company she works with, they humanize AI copy. So it's like automatically right away, there's the kind of the opposite is being produced. Like they, you know, with other ChatGPT or other text-based things, they'll make the copy and then their company will go in and like quote unquote humanize it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting, because it's like, oh, okay, we're already immediately going kind of back on it a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's because of that, there's all these new industries that are going to pop up.
Absolutely.
And I'm hopeful for that. You know, I'm not terrified of it. I just think it's interesting.
No, I don't think there's any point in being terrified about it. Like,
yeah.
It's here, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just what you do with it, right? So, but I think having the curiosity to check it out,
yeah.
even when you're tired, even when you're, you know, doing a million things for your own business or whatever, like some of these things are big enough and coming fast enough that you got to be curious about them.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's interesting stuff. There's one person that's been I'm not going to say their name because it's not the most positive thing in the world. But there's one person that I met in the last couple years that has really, like, it's gotten in my head about it. I met a gentleman maybe 3 or 4 years ago. Nice guy. But he had never sent an email before. And we were chatting about stuff, and I was talking to him about something. He's like, oh, I don't really know how to use computers. I'm like, oh, I hear that all the time. Totally fine. You know, there's a wide different variety of, you know, do I know how to code and stuff? No, not necessarily, but I can run some basic automations on my Mac or whatever, yeah, right? But I was just like, wow, like, you know, I don't want to be swept away where, you know, 10, 20 years down the road, I don't know how to Neuralink with you or whatever, you know? And that, there's a little bit of fear that is driving my, like, constant trying to learn everything, because I don't want to be, like, left behind, you know? Like, I don't want to, please don't take this the wrong way, but, you know, you're older than me, right? Like, do you have any of those thoughts of being like, oh, well, like, well, what is life going to be in 30 years? Like, am I going to be on top of it enough, yeah, or, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, both personally, right? Yeah. Just because once you get late 40s, you can feel things start to change, right? Yeah. Like, ability to pay attention for hours and hours at a time is not the same, you know, things like that, right?
Right.
Need a nap every now and then.
Yeah.
But besides just the age, that kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, is just people's ability, true, to adapt to it. So I do worry, you know, a little, just that human ability to deal with that is gonna be swept.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I guess that does make sense. I mean, in that same breath, I say the one person that I was like, wow, this is really interesting. I think he was in his like late 50s, didn't understand it. But at the same time, my grandfather, who is 91, is like on top of it, man. He's
cool.
Like, I remember I went over to his place once and he was like, Byron, I just set up this really interesting audio setup where I can, everything's like voice activated, and I have like a smart home setup, and I can have this thing play this. And I was like, I don't even really 100% understand what you're talking about right now, you know.
But high five.
But yeah, really interesting stuff. You know, he's a big inspiration, because I mean, he grew up like in the you know, in like the 20s, and it's like, yeah, no, in the 30s, I guess. But yeah, I guess there's really just a big range of people's potential to do stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, flashing back, you were in New Jersey, and then what brought you out here? Did we
touch
on that?
Yeah, that was for a job. Okay. So we were in New Jersey, and I think, so all of my wife's family, you know, big Italian family,
okay,
from right around there. And so, you know, their version of moving away from the family is like 30 minutes, right? And I remember actually when we were in college, we imagined for a little while that we might move to Colorado, cool mountains and stuff.
Yeah.
And then she just started having, you know, bad dreams about it, like being away from the family and stuff. Yeah. So I was like, okay, that's not the way this is going to go.
Right.
But we did have the opportunity to move out here for a job, where I already knew the people, and they were just moving the headquarters a bit. And so we came out and we figured, we'll be here for a little while. It's close enough. We can drive back. We'll probably move back at some point. Right.
Yeah.
But I kind of fell in love with it. It's a little quieter, right?
Yeah.
It's a little less keeping up with the Joneses. It's a little more, I don't know, just pastoral.
Yeah.
And now when we do go to New Jersey, and we're in a really nice part of New Jersey, but it's just a little bustly. And then when we come back and turn into our little dark valley, I'm just like, Yeah.
It is strange. I mean, I'd say Pennsylvania as a whole has, you know, a lot of everywhere has ups and downs, but I mean, so like I was born in Lancaster, I've lived in Lancaster, I've had the opportunity through the music and other things to travel around a bit. And I will say, you know, like being so close to all these major hubs on the East Coast is pretty sweet. You know, I mean, I always tell people that are not from here, I mean, hey, within, you know, I mean, specifically in Lancaster, I know you guys aren't in Lancaster, but like 20 minutes you go any direction, you're just in the middle of nowhere, which is kind of nice. But then, you know, drive 3 hours north, you're in New York, you're in New Jersey, you go down to Philly, Baltimore, all that other good stuff. That I like that aspect of it, you know. But I do like the mountains, and we are lacking mountains out this way.
Yeah. At this point, you know, it's funny because one of the things that we're sort of toying with is like, oh, it'd be nice to have a little bit more land. Mm. We're on, you know, acreage or a little bit more. And when I say a little bit more land, like, you know, 10 acres, 20 yeah. acres, 30, yeah, yeah. 40, right? And of course, around here, that's pretty expensive. So yeah. whenever we do spot something, it's like, oh, down in Virginia. And mm. and we're like, oh, man, would we leave like community and right. the friendships and things like that that are building up? Family's less of a hold because, you know, a lot of Sharon's the youngest and a lot of her brothers and sisters have, you know, kind of moved into a different phase of their life now. Yeah. And so it's not like we have to be within a short drive necessarily right away, but right. but like, would we actually move away from here? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a tough one.
Yeah. It's rough. I mean, my partner Lindsay, grew up in the woods, essentially in the Pacific Northwest on a, I don't even know, like 20, 30 acres or whatever. Cool. And we live in the city now, and we have this discussion all the time of like, well, it'd be really nice to have just land. I don't really care about what the housing is. We'll build a shack and live on it. But like, I also very much enjoy the tranquility of nature.
Yeah.
But, you know, I know a lot of people here, and my business is here, and yeah. all that other stuff, which is a whole other conversation about like moving a business. It's something that's been coming up a lot in my mind lately.
Oh, yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, I, you know, we have a definitely, you know, all of our stuff's here. But I'm starting to kind of build up relationships and build up little clientele in like different pockets around the country. And I'm like, well, do I want to stay here forever? You know, yeah. I don't know.
And but, there are parts of what you do that, you know, like post-production stuff, yeah. I assume that yeah, can be done anywhere.
Wherever,
right? Right? Yeah.
yeah.
But then other parts of it that are very physical.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really just like the recording aspect. Mm-hmm. If that wasn't such like a financial thing here, then the rest of it I could do anywhere.
Yeah,
but that's like 70% of it, you know. Mm. So it's like, damn, I kind of just gotta like change. But I don't want to. It's yeah. a whole thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
That'd be fun to look at that together yeah, if you're up for it. Because
yeah.
probably if I had to guess, it's probably more than that percentage of costs. Too,
yeah,
right. So
kind of. That's a whole other thing. I'm not gonna super get into the podcast, yeah, sure. but I have like a very nice setup here. With my overhead yeah. in this place that we are,
yeah.
it's like cool. kind of hard to beat,
yeah.
you know. And I've been here for so long that it's not changing. So, you know, that's a whole other thing.
Sure, sure.
Not on the podcast stuff, but shout out to everybody and whatever. Okay, cool. So you come out here for work. You started the business 5 years ago.
Yeah, so out here yeah. for work, and then almost as soon as we got out here, maybe within a year,
yeah,
that company was bought out.
Gotcha.
Right, so then that sort of started the travel journey.
Right.
Almost instantly, then I was, you know, flying every couple weeks, every other yeah. week, every third week, something like that, and I did that for almost 2 decades then. Mm. Yeah. And that was cool at first. Cause I was late 20s, 27 or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to ride on a private jet someday? And I got
yeah.
to do that. Like,
right.
you know, and there's
right.
the president of this and the vice president of that and me, and I don't even know why I'm on the plane.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
you know, got to do that for a while. And then, you know, that phase ended, but the travel continued, but then it was more commercial and that's less fun. So
yeah, right. Gotcha. Interesting. So one thing I was super curious about is like your relationship with music. Because obviously, you know, Rachel is very involved with music.
Yeah.
Do you listen to a lot of music in the home? Is there a correlation?
Not that I choose. No. Yeah. So in our house, there's probably always like Christian radio yeah. stuff going,
gotcha.
Right? But that's my wife's stuff that she puts on.
Yeah.
I would say, you know, just as far as the Rachel thing goes, that's just her. Like,
gotcha.
Since she was five,
yeah.
she was super musical. And so, like, it almost wouldn't matter if she had never heard music in our house at all.
Yeah.
She would have found it. It would have found her.
Yeah.
But growing up, more music growing up. We, eclectic, like, lots of different stuff. My stepdad was, you know, had a record collection, and so he'd put on different things. And,
yeah,
you know, what kind of stuff?
Yeah, like, what do you listen to?
I
mean, you mentioned the Christian music. There's a lot of good stuff within that world. It's kind of like a whole genre that exists within other subgenres and whatnot.
Yeah. I don't know that I choose anything intentionally these days for music. Yeah.
Gotcha. Interesting.
It just, like, that just sort of flows, and it doesn't, it's like, not I don't like need to change thought. It and go find something.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, you know, a couple that I reacted to. Like, I really liked, Spider-Man movie.
Okay.
What's Up Danger, that song, mixed with that movie.
Yeah.
I was just like, I don't know, maybe I was like, feverish from being something, but I was like super emotional when I heard that the first time. That was
interesting.
Cool.
I got to check it out. Is that a recent Spider-Man movie?
Not the latest one. It was the first one that introduced Miles Morales, my favorite Spider-Man.
Yeah. I'm not hip. I got to check it out.
Oh, yeah. That was good.
Yeah.
Black Caviar was the artist that did the What's Up Danger song.
Gotcha. Gotcha. It's bad. I always ask people, like, what's the kind of music do you listen to? And I'm like, there's so much more music than there was before that it's like, it's very hard to keep up on who's who and what sounds like what, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I listen to a lot of classic older stuff.
Oh, like what?
Just like all of it.
All
of the older music. I mean, like, this record collection here is primarily old, like, classic Americana with a very small section for, like, old 90s hip-hop. But, you know, like, from the Bee Gees to Brian Eno to, you know, like, the Rolling Stones, and then all the rock music, and then, like, strange, obscure bluegrass music, and ambient electronic stuff. And I've never really been tied down to, like, one genre, you know what I mean? I mean, you could even look at, like, my professional life of music. I was in a hardcore metal band, and then I DJ'd in Philly for a while. I was doing, like, the house music rave stuff, which was a lot, and then kind of transitioned into hip-hop. And then now I've been mostly doing hip hop stuff, but then working more with the metal bands again, and then doing like children's choirs and like stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's all just
children's choirs.
Yeah, it's all over the place. I just like, I appreciate the creativity.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, whatever there's stuff that I hear that I'm like, I don't love this, but I can appreciate that somebody made it. You know, maybe it's just not for me. You know.
Yeah.
I wish more people would look at music like that.
That's cool.
Like, a lot of people are just like, this is what I like, and I don't listen to anything else. It's like, you're missing out on so much, man.
I probably am missing out just because I'm not actively choosing, you know, different things, right?
I would challenge you to try to listen to 5 new artists year or whatever.
I got my first one today, so I was running a little bit ahead of time, and Rachel was like, hey, slow it down a little. So so I went thrifting. Nice. And
where'd you go?
Somewhere in New Holland, I think. Yeah.
Was it like a thrift store, or was it like a cool little weird?
No, it was like a big old thrift store.
Okay. Like a Salvel bunch or like a...
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, a lot of clothes and things like that. But
yeah,
I found a record there. Porgy and Bess.
Okay.
Gershwin.
Nice.
Like, I think he recomposed it for the Utah Symphony or something like that. And I grew up with a dog named Porgy.
Nice.
And it was for that musical. And I have never heard the whole thing. So I was like,
maybe we'll check it out.
And I think that's where the song Summertime from Billie Holiday, one of the most recorded songs in all time, comes from, right?
Right, right, right.
So anyway, that's my new one.
We got one.
Find a couple more.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. Also, to that point, I don't know if this is going to really lead anywhere, but I accidentally watched the Country Music Awards recently. I forget where I was. It was like it came on in a hotel or something like that. And I was like, oh, I've never watched this before. I'll check it out. It was really interesting that there's this one song. I can't remember the name of it because, you know, I can't right now. But it was the same concept where it was like this one song has won an award like every year for 5 or 6 different years because different artists just keep covering it. I just think that's an interesting random thing I wanted to say. It is strange how that works. You know, there's the recycling of styles, different music, different fashion things, all that other stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm not the biggest fashion guy. I'm a big fan of Costco. Shout out to Costco. I took Rachel there recently. I got her a giant thing of Goldfish.
Awesome.
Big Costco fan.
Yeah. I'm not much of a shopper myself. I think... at least half of my wardrobe is hand-me-downs from my younger nephews.
Nice.
Because that's one of the benefits of living in the country is you don't have to care that much what you how you dress.
Yeah.
And as long as I have like on a polo shirt for my Zoom calls, pretty much anything else goes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think this one is actually a hand-me-down right now.
Very good stuff. Yeah, I like to be, I prioritize comfort over cool stuff, you know? Yeah, no, that's cool. But speaking of Zoom calls, do you ever see, well, I should first ask, like, do you delve into the social media world at all? You watch like YouTube videos or anything like that?
I do a little, yeah.
Okay, cool. Have you ever seen come across this guy? He has a little green screen behind him, and he'll do Zoom calls. Like he attaches it to his body, but he'll do like Zoom business calls or whatever while he's like on the beach or like going down a roller coaster or whatever. And it's framed in a way that it looks like he's like sitting in his home.
That's
he's actually
funny. No,
out
I've never
about.
Seen that.
Like, yeah, I'll have to find it. Send it to Rachel or something. It's funny cool. stuff.
Yeah.
Zoom. I have a lot of opinions on Zoom. It works.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Shout out to Zoom.
Yeah. Keeps you off of airplanes.
Yeah.
That's my main thing. So.
Yeah, Zoom's. I did pretty good on Zoom actually. I bought their stock really early on, and then during COVID and all that, it had a little bump, and then now it's
taking a nap.
Yeah, now it's kind of all gone. Yeah. Are you big into stocks and investments and futures and?
No, I paid more attention to that when I was younger, and you know, you kind of like you're like, yeah, it's up, oh, it's down, yeah, it's up, and then you get a little bored and wander off, and if you come back much later, then it's usually up.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I had a little bit of time where I think a lot of people in my age range did as well, like, you know, kind of during pandemic, whatever, with like crypto got me kind of into it. I was like, oh, this is interesting. I'll put a couple bucks here, see what it does or whatever. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, like I got like a 900% gain on this. Yeah. Like now I'm a day trader. And I was just like canceling all the studio sessions. Like I'm just going to spend time on my phone doing this, which was interesting, but you know, when you get a bunch of stuff and then you sell it right away, you have to pay a higher taxes on it, and I learned that the hard way. So
that's right, but, they get you.
No, it's fascinating.
Yeah, stuff. In our house now, Sharon, my wife, does almost all the financial investing and management and stuff, and I just try to go out and earn a living and grow a business and look at it every now and then when she shows me and that's it's enough to worry you about the one world of growing a business than it is to do the other, and I'm thankful she takes that stuff on.
Yeah, no, it's a lot. I took a major step back too. I realized I was spending because the phone aspect of it, I could like trade on my phone, so I wasn't, you know, on TD Ameritrade or whatever. I was just sitting there, and I was like, oh, I'm just looking at my phone all the time, and I'm already like trying to not do that as much.
Yeah,
so I kind of took a step back, and we'll see how my guesses go in 20 years from now or whatever. But interesting stuff. Here's a thing we haven't. I used to have these like reoccurring questions when I originally first started this whole thing out. I had like a list of 300 questions that I had written down. And then I kind of abandoned that 100 episodes ago. Going back to that, I'm going to give you the option. Do you want to go in a super light place or a super dark place? It's completely up to you. It's totally fine either way.
Let's start dark, and then I'll let you know if we need to pull it back.
What's the most emotional pain that you've ever dealt with? And how did you overcome it?
I would say it was while my mom was getting ready to pass away. So she had brain cancer when I was 7.
Yeah.
And she, you know, at that time, science on this stuff wasn't great. Medicine on this wasn't great. Yeah. They were kind of like, okay, you know, you probably have 6 months after they had operated and everything like that, 6 months to a year to live. And she was sad about that for a little while, and then I think she came back with an answer that said something like, screw that, I have kids to raise, I'll see you 10 years from now, just as I'm standing here today. And she did, she made it, you know, 18 something like that, 18 years I think. And so when it reoccurred, and it, you know, it did come back and was ultimately what took her, you know, I was mid-20s and I was able to go out and had a business at that time. I was able to kind of leave that for a bit, go out and take care of her in California for a few months. And I can remember a conversation with Sharon, my wife, where, you know, she's kind of asking how it's going and could we maybe bring her to New Jersey to live with us there. And and I was just like almost incoherent, knowing that like this was imminent. Right. There's nothing that I could do about it. And I just wasn't at peace with it yet.
Right.
Fairly soon thereafter, thankfully, I was, but you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, I remember like almost having a shrieking, you know, kind of response that was just so uncharacteristic that I assume that came from just unmitigated pain. So.
Yeah. But what's your relationship like with death?
I would say that was a weird moment because I don't think of death as the end. I don't think of it, although at that time, I don't know how I felt about it, but I don't think of it as the end. I don't, you know, I'm probably scared about the leading up to it, right? Loss of faculties, loss of, you know, having just the stuff that comes before it, but not necessarily death.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting because, I mean, I don't know if it's a fortunate thing or an unfortunate thing, but I personally was terrified when I was a kid, you know, what is this new thing, you know, that happens. And then over the years, maybe it's just a part of knowing a lot of people or whatever, but now, I mean, I'm 29, right? And I've, you know, we've 60 some people, I think, so far have passed that I've been friends with or known or involved with in some way. And like, you know, it was a weird time to be alive now where it's like, oh wow, you know, for the first time in like 2 or 3 years, like 10 people didn't die every year that I knew. So I've just been like around it constantly all the time, and I've had to think about it a whole lot because every time it's like, well, how do you think about this now, you know? And I'm always curious what other people's like relationship is, because some people have been very fortunate that, you know, they don't, or maybe they haven't been, I'm not sure, because it's going to happen regardless, but that they're not interacting with that at all, you know? Where at the same time, I've had conversations on the podcast before of people that, you know, grew up working in a mortuary, or and they have a completely different concept of death and whatnot, and then people that are very religious and people that aren't, and different views and whatnot. And I think it's like, it's one of those things that people talk about a little bit more maybe now.
Yeah.
But like, it's part of life, you know? And like, I don't think we should be afraid of it, regardless of whatever you think happens after you pass.
Yeah.
It's like, we should talk about it.
Is
more,
what it
know?
Is.
You know? Yeah. No, and I'm just curious from your standpoint, because like, you know, it's obviously not the happiest thing in the entire world to talk about, but it is something that I think we should discuss more.
Yeah,
in my opinion, you know.
Yeah, I agree. So I didn't have a lot of exposure to it growing up.
Yeah.
Just didn't. I would say, you know, now that I'm getting older, and so we have friends that have passed. All of our parents have passed.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's something that definitely spending more time with. And for our kids, we definitely try not to have it be something freaky.
Yeah.
We, you know, take the 9-year-old to funerals and you know, to pay respects and be in community with people that we know when they have a loved one pass. And I think that feels good and right, as opposed to like, no, they can't go because they'd freak out about it. They're going to have some anxious moments about it when they, you know, at 9-year-old try to conceptualize, well, does this mean this happens for mom and dad and for other, but hopefully it helps them to kind of work through it, because it is, as you say, it's a part of life. And, and for a long time, it wasn't something that people spoke much about.
Yeah. Yeah. That's wild stuff. Maybe on a more positive aspect, what's like the most beautiful thing that you've experienced so far in your entire life?
I don't know that I have a specific moment, but there's a genre that just seems to get me. Like, yeah. You know, you mentioned your like visual art and things like that.
Yeah.
And for me, like nature as art, or, you know, just the experience of that awe-inspiring level of nature, right? Yeah. That's something that gets me deeply, like deeply. And if it's been too long since I've seen something like that, I can kind of feel it. And when I get outside, I see that, I feel that too, yeah. Right? And I would say that's sort of the, in nature, even if it's in the garden or something like that, is where I feel most connected to God. And so it's sort of like a visual awesomeness and, you know, connected feeling at the same time for me.
Yeah.
And so.
No, that is beautiful. Lindsay and I have a little plot of land. We try to grow as much of our own vegetables and whatnot as possible. And, you know, she really kind of opened my mind to the whole, you know, you go to the store, you get a grapefruit or whatever, and you're like, oh, cool. I know that this was grown somewhere. But to have the tiny seed, to be there, to till the land, to be there for the process, and then to be able to, you know, feed yourself from the earth is, I mean, I know it's a simple concept that I'm kind of, you know, over complicating, but it's just so
it's
beautiful.
Like a rediscovery, you know? of this thing. It's like people have known that for a thousand years,
right,
and it wasn't
right.
glamorous. It was just making food, right?
Yeah, right.
But
right.
now we're like, whoa.
Yeah, I know. Wow. Yeah. You don't have to go to the fluorescent light building to get the thing.
Yeah. So yeah. I've been doing this. I've always liked to garden. The last 5 years, though, again, since I've not been traveling, that's kind of my go-to hobby. Like if I go out first thing in the morning, spend a couple minutes. You know, find some time later in the day to get out again if it's nice. Yeah, love that. And in fact, that has become, I would say, part of my prayer life is like, hey, God, you know, you do all this amazing stuff.
Yeah.
Like starting from a seed, all it needs is a little water. Can you kind of show me how to do something like that in community or in, you know, in things that I'm trying so hard to do sometimes? Maybe I just need to ease back a little bit and see how things work and then help nudge them from there. Right. So that's been pretty cool. This year we got chickens for the first time, nice. First flock of chickens.
Very cool.
And that's been really fun because I thought that we were getting them for, the kids will learn some responsibility and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I freaking like to hang out with the chickens.
Yeah.
So does my wife. Yeah. It's the funniest thing because we're like, hey, you want to go hang out with the chickens? So we go out there and there's just something so funny about, you know, they have personalities and stuff, they're just chickens doing chicken things. And it's just so fun to like, I don't know, be near them while they're hanging out.
Yeah.
And then if it's like, oh, I'm weeding now. Okay. I'm not weeding. I'm gathering food for the chickens,
right.
And they'll be excited about it. By the way, they're like, "What do you have?" As opposed to just I'm weeding. So
that's awesome.
So I see why they're the gateway animal for homesteading.
Yeah. Next stop is more acres and a couple goats,
maybe
a cow or a.
So do you have a homestead YouTuber that you watch or anything like that?
I have a book. It's it's a large book. It's apparently some famous homesteading book. It's like really, it's like a foot wide.
Huh.
And it tells you in there basically everything that you need to do to be self-sustaining. And I've just been kind of penciling through it for the last couple of years, trying to retain as much of it as I can.
That's cool.
Real big on like self-sustaining concepts. And
kind of go-to YouTuber for homesteading is Justin Rhodes.
Okay.
He just, you know, has a family in a little acreage down near Asheville, North Carolina.
Okay.
But he also, you know, goes around and visits other people sometimes, so you get to see some other stuff. But yeah, that's fun.
I gotta check it out.
And you know, one more riff off of the chicken angle there. Mm-hmm. So you know, the chickens have their little fenced in area, and then we've got a bigger fenced in area where lots of weeds grow and stuff. And I was like, oh, I guess I probably know if there's poisonous stuff in here for chickens, because, you know, it's the first time we're raising them. So our other daughter came and was like using an app to tell me what all the stuff is, and like 90% of the stuff in there is actually edible for both chickens and people.
Oh, nice.
And now I know that chickens don't eat poisonous stuff because they just ignore it.
That's so, good to know. Good chicken fact.
For the most part. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, hey, this has been super awesome. And we kind of touched on it a little bit, but I always like to end the podcast with one question. First, I don't think I've asked you this actually. How old are you?
52.
52. All right, right on. In your 52 years of existing and being conscious of things, what's the biggest takeaway so far? You can take as much time on that as you want.
I think I'm going to say, you know, it's like there's this, everything has a life cycle. Okay. And so you kind of have to go through that life cycle, and I'm sure there's more stuff I'm going to learn, but I think it's, you know, you kind of learn to be, first you're totally dependent on your parents, on whatever. Then you learn to be a little independent, right? And then at some point, you're kind of like drawn back into community and doing for others as much as more for yourself, right? And I would say the surprising joy that comes from doing that when you're doing it with other people that you like and you're working together on something, you know, I don't know how to put it into, you know, it's the teamwork thing. It's the feeling like you're doing something productive thing. It's kind of like a whole bunch of things get rolled into one there,
right.
That it just feels like you're doing what you're meant to be doing. So
awesome.
That's what I'll go with.
Right on. Well, thanks a bunch for coming on the podcast. It's over now. Right. Hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you.